Up there in Michigan. I'm a Michigan girl, born and raised for close to 30 years in Michigan. And loved it in the summer and the spring. But yeah, fall, not so much the winter. Yep. So, yes, Michigan. I've enjoyed all the sharing this morning, and something I was sitting here noticing and listening to while Barb was speaking are the birds. And we've talked about the birds a few times today and heard birds in the background. I've heard birds in the background, not only with Cheryl in her sharing. I heard some doves cooing the second time you came on to share. And the birds here generally are wake me up in the morning around 5 or 5:30. And we've had lots of bird activity right now. We have a couple of nests very tight to our house, one in a wreath that I have on the front of my house. It's just a, the wreath is simply made out of the sticks from a tree. And so it's like up against the house, and there's a nest, and at least three, if not four, fairly grown birds. And I have been joking with my husband, they need to get out of the nest. They need to bust out. I took a chair and actually got up on the chair while the mom was off searching for food for these, gosh, what looked like teenagers at this point. And I took a video of it, and they one of them was, with open mouth, hoping I was mama coming to feed it. And so today, I noticed a hawk on a telephone pole that sits in a corner of our yard, and it's quite large. I mean, quite large. And lots of other types of birds on the wire itself, as if they are standing on guard. We had a crow snatch another bird out of a nest in our backyard. And again, the nest is against the house, and my husband actually witnessed it happen. And I'm glad I didn't have to see the circle of lunch in action. I'm not ignorant to the fact that that happens. But yeah, lots of birds and babies flying out of the nest. They've hit up against our windows, and you can see that they are like on their training wheels. And so the larger, more predatory birds are well aware of what's going on. And so it's been kind of an interesting process to watch. And it made me reflect on, that notion of moving out of the nest. And sometimes it just feels like words can be overwhelming, just in the sense of, I'm sick of the words. I'm sick of the words. I'm looking more for the stillness of the experience of being in connection with the truth of who I am. And so, oftentimes for me, that seems to have to involve a distraction-free environment. I mean, short of like listening to birds, but lately my dog has been a huge distraction. He is 13 years old at this point, and has a cataract in one eye, so I suspect he's blind in that eye. And we now think he is mostly deaf. And so he has now taken to barking at the top of his lungs. Even if I'm on the other side of a door, he knows I've left the room, and he is very, very, very persistent. He's a dachshund, and so he doesn't stop until I actually get up from my meditation and go address him with food. Usually, he's very obsessed with food, and so it has. I am not at a place in my meditative practice where it seems All where I am in total awareness, watching awareness, simply able to take in the sound of my dog and his what seems to be a demand for that very attention that I am trying to redirect from the world and from objects, one of whom is my dog, and back towards awareness, watching awareness. And so, I'm actually considering sometime in July, if it works out, to go to a 10-day silent retreat in at Ahom with my friend Karen Wirth, who will be working in the kitchen as a matter of service. And so it may work out that I fly the nest and here in from California and go to North Carolina for a 10-day silent retreat, which sounds quite attractive right now. So yes, we'll see. We have been reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul. And this is a Michael Langford book, as I've shared with you guys before. And someone who listens on the radio, and by the way, to anyone who might be listening on the radio, welcome. It's obvious there are those who listen on the radio because someone did, in fact, write me to ask why I call my program No Fluff. And that's just my way of describing how I see Michael Langford's work in particular. There doesn't seem like a lot of fluff that goes, a lot of extraneous anything that's added to words of wisdom, I'll say, or truth sayings, or direct path quotes. It's just that and nothing else. And that appeals to me. That appeals to me. And so I like the no fluff aspect of it. And that's why I called it that. And what he's done is shared from seven different Christian mystics. And we are now reading in chapter two from W. Norman Cooper. And we just really started last week at the beginning of that chapter two. And these are powerful quotes by W. Norman Cooper, and they're from his book, Finding Yourself. And so Michael Langford selected these powerful quotes and is now sharing them with us in his book called Experience Your Perfect Soul. So if you have the book, we are on page 38. And I just want to take a minute to acknowledge from my five-pointed spiritual aspiration of constancy or consistency that number one, give up the idea that you know something. Number two, ask in all things, remembering you do not know. Number three, watch your thoughts. Number four, be the empty shell. And number five, live as divine self. And that's all wrapped within my purpose or my aspiration, which is consistency, constancy. And I pray for the strength. I pray for the guidance. I appreciate the support. And for this I am grateful. Amen. So last week, we started off, and W. Norman Cooper simply explained that he's going to be using two words. One is yourself as two separate words, and the self is capitalized. So yourself as two separate words. And he says these words should be thought of as two words and not as the one word, yourself, yourself, as one word. For many years, okay, so I'll start at the beginning because we didn't get very far. The following quotes by W. Norman Cooper are from the book Finding Yourself. In this book, I will be using the two words, yourself. These words should be thought of as two words and not as the one word, yourself. For many years, in fact, since the time I was a boy, I have applied what I now call self-truth knowing. And those words are simply separated by a hyphen, self-truth knowing. And so when that happens, for me at least, I take that to mean it's like it's one word. It's one, there's one meaning to it. Through this application of self-truth knowing, I have seen great and good things happen. It would be quite impossible for me to list the thousands of changes for the better which have come about through the application of self-truth knowing. But more important than any of these changes has been that when self-truth knowing has been correctly applied, numerous individuals have been able to find the correct view of themselves. And this piece is called Yourself as Knowing. This self-truth knowing might be thought of as prayer or meditation, but it is much greater than that which usually passes as either prayer or meditation. What parades as prayer is that which is frequently used to plead for some selfish personal gain. And of course, such pleading is not genuine prayer. And it certainly is not self-truth knowing. Meditation is usually thought of as the practice of thinking about something outside of or separate from the one doing the meditating. Such so-called meditation is not self-truth knowing, which finds its influence for good in the awareness of the inner power of the I am. And just as a comment, that's exactly what our reading spoke to this morning from the Inner Ramana Circus in the Meadow reading. The mantra that was being spoken of, the mantra that we were asked to return to again and again and again when we found ourselves wound up in the circus, swinging from the ceiling and in that total thought, story, drama, focus on externals. We were asked to bring our attention back by using the mantra, I am that I am. And this is saying, Okay, so this is the first meditation of thinking that the practice of meditating is something that a separate me is doing, trying to connect with a something else that I'm told is really me. So again, meditation is usually thought of as the practice of thinking about something outside of or separate from the one doing the meditating. Such so-called meditation is not self-truth knowing, which finds its influence for good in the awareness of the inner power of the I am. And so, to distinguish between the usually accepted concept of prayer or meditation and what I will be writing about, I have coined the hyphenated word self-truth knowing. Genuine self-truth knowing can be completely understood only in silence. This is true because the true understanding of the self must eventually be learned and accepted in the silence of your own knowing. The silence of your own knowing, not someone else's knowing, not what some other teacher tells us is, even in Regina's, in our gentle healing class, one of our assignments is to listen to Regina's meditation. And one of the instructions at the very end, where we're just listening to music and there's no talking going on, the introduction to that last portion of it is where Gina asks us to use the practice that we come to understand is the one that works for us, the one that takes us to that place of self-truth knowing, where you recognize there is not a separate self seeking itself. They are the same self. There's not two awarenesses, a Kathy personified awareness that's being asked to look for the absolute awareness. It's the same awareness. It's the same awareness. And that absolute awareness, which is what I am in truth, what I am as self, is the I'm going to use the word pinnacle or point of the meditation, that we rest in that, not in some sort of striving to think about, there's thought involved. And if thought is involved, we can notice that and simply turn away from that thought. Turn away from that busyness. Turn away from that distraction. Back to the awareness that already is, as I am. Found only in the silence, accomplished only in the silence of your own being. So again, the most effective method for self-development is self-truth knowing. This method goes directly to cause. Goes directly to cause. It places our attention squarely on attention, on awareness itself. On the seer, the watcher, the looker. It excludes the necessity or desirability of looking outside the self for help or for good. It leads directly to self-realization. Why? Because it removes all restrictive thoughts about the self and enables you to know that you are the self now. Restrictive thoughts. You know, that word alone, restrictive thoughts, it's not even pointing out like a specific restrictive thought, because all thought is restrictive. Thought is a departure. It is a distraction. It is mental activity trying to involve itself in this idea that it can help you. It can help you to know yourself. Kind of like usurping the practice of meditation so that this self of restrictive thoughts that's now going to help you find the self that you seem to be looking for is going to jump in and be your pal. So pay attention to me. An even benign thought. Thought that it's referred to here as, you know, good. Good thought. Helpful thought. It's still thought. The ego is also, or the imposter is also very clever at using, you know, the more benign things, the helpful things, the good things, and twisting that in a way that is a preservation strategy for itself. So be mindful of that as well. So that simply means all thought. I don't have to, you know, there's not a guessing game here. It's all thought. So whenever I notice any sort of a thought while sitting in meditation or with open eyes, loving all method, or whatever you use in the course of your day to stay in awareness, watching awareness without attaching to it. Thought is restrictive. So, you know, ask, what is the truth in this thought? If a thought seems to be something that, you know, maybe perks up the attention, like, you know, whoa, I need to pay attention to that, we can ask, what is here for me? I don't know. We have a visceral response somehow, that sense where you get that little aha, or I need to pay attention to this, or there's something about that thought that it's not to be dismissed. We can ask, what is here for my highest good? Teach me that I might know. I will not use my own past learning as the light to guide me now. Whatever you want to say to yourself. You return to the self that you are now. And even when Barb was speaking during her time, and she shared at the very end about noticing, let's see, what was it? She noticed something that she had done. Oh, being impatient. And she noticed it. You noticed it. And you then immediately took action and went around the block, hoping to let that person, you know, in. So quickly going from noticing what we're doing, noticing the thought, the restrictive thought, we're already in awareness when we're noticing, oh, I was impatient. That is awareness. And we correct it immediately. So I was stoked she said that. That feels like progress to me. So thank you, Barb, for paying attention. As I have indicated, self-truth knowing is quite different from what is usually thought of as meditation. What is thought of as meditation requires an object, usually thought to be outside of oneself, upon which to meditate. But self-truth knowing finds all in the self. To self-truth knowing, there is only the self and no necessity for an object outside of the self. That all is the self. This is the basic difference between self-truth knowing and what is thought of as meditation. And funny, guys, because I just realized that all of that. I have my bookmarked in two places. One, which is at the very beginning of, letting me know that I'm in chapter two, and then where I actually left off, which was on page 41. Instructions that Michael Langford says is help increasing our desire for liberty thoughtfully, carefully, and repeatedly. And so I'm glad I read that again. So, okay, here's where we were to start this week. Self-truth knowing is the most direct way to find and be the self. This does not mean that other methods of seeking the self are not helpful, because indeed they are. But because they require an object of thought, they cannot go directly to cause. And what came to mind for me just right away as I was reading that, was the instruction I've heard many times over my life to focus on the breath. And that is an object of thought. While that thought has never, on a personal level, appealed to me, nor have I used that method, to somehow quiet the mind so that I could go deeper into meditation, I'm not knocking that in any way, as this is not. So other methods of seeking the self can be helpful, but they're not the most direct way because they require an object of thought to be focused on, and they don't go directly to the cause. You're going to your breathing as opposed to going directly to yourself, to awareness, focusing awareness on the awareness. Not awareness on the breath, awareness. Why read this? Well, that's the example that came to mind about the object of thought. Self-truth knowing is what the name implies. It is knowing the truth of the self. It is the self. Or intelligence, knowing the truth of the self as intelligence. Good, viewed as the self, is no longer fleeting, limited, and limiting. All good is found in and as the I. And I'll pause there because, when I reflect on the word good, certainly in a relative world, good is a condition, and it's a temporary condition. For instance, I'll just give a for instance. My arthritis in my wrist might not flare up today, and so it's good. That's a good thing. But tomorrow, if I actively use my hands in a way that seems to inflame this bodily condition called arthritis, it might not be so good. So that good obviously is not the good that is spoken here, the good that's found in and as the I. Not the personal I, not the body I. You are the self or consciousness. You are the self or consciousness. Self-truth knowing is the knowing, not what isn't, but what is. Then, self-truth knowing satisfactorily answers the question, who am I? It declares that you are consciousness. You know, it seems like when we sit down in meditation and ask that question, who am I? It's like, who's asking that question? This false self that you cannot possibly be is asking the question as if the answer is going to validate the falsity of itself as well as the question. It's impossible not to be who you are. And yet we ask the question in inquiry, who am I? Who am I? I don't know this self that is only everything, that knows no exclusion, that is boundless, timeless, formless, beyond intellect. I don't know that self as intimately as I know the bound, limited, grasping, questioning, uncertain self that now who is being seemingly put in charge of a meditation practice to ask a question, which is a thought, and open a mind to, I mean, the whole process is just like confounding to the thinking mind. And that's why we're asked to ask the question and let go of all thought beyond the question. Who am I? And we rest in silence, allowing the silence, the awareness to reveal the truth. Without any involvement of the mental chatter or thinking being involved, the self-truth knowing satisfactorily answers the question, who am I? You know, have you ever asked yourself that question? I mean, I have many times. And right away, some thoughts start coming about who am I? Who I am? I'm this and I'm that. And I think I might be this. And I think I read that I'm supposed to be that. And I mean, when that thought comes in with all the rapidity with which it wants to answer the question, we're already stuck in the mental chatter. There's no silence there. We're lost in thought again. So we turn our attention back to the silence. Just relax back into the silence. And every time we notice a thought that wants to answer, who am I? We turn back to the silence. Self-truth knowing is knowing the truth regarding the self. The self is conscious only of itself. Only of itself. And do you think that that self in the inquiry, who am I, would start answering you with, you know, all the answers that you seem to get? You're this and you're that and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, even if those things seem to be spiritually, I don't know, familiar. I mean, it's still, again, thought, lost in thought. And it's saying self knows only itself. Love knows only itself. Awareness knows only itself. Nothing else. No fluff. The self knows only itself, its grandeur, its love, its harmony. The greatest force for good is to be found in self-truth knowing. Knowing the truth of yourself should be your life work. Knowing the truth of the self should be your love work. Knowing the truth of the self should be your all. No longer is knowing the truth an abstract goal to be attained. You, the self of you, are the goal and the accomplishment. You are the self. In the word accomplishment, immediately made me think of A Course of Love, which is a class that's held on Wednesday mornings, facilitated by Reverend Carrie Christensen. And we've been reading that book for quite some time now, and there is a section in that book that I believe might be called The Accomplished, and it speaks to this very idea that you already are the self. That's already been accomplished. It's done, over. You are have been created. You are a co-creator, forever joined to the mind of God. In God, there, that lesson from A Course in Miracles that says God, not a lesson, but that there's a piece early on that says God himself is incomplete without me, speaks to fatherhood and the Son joined as one, inseparable, accomplished. So there's no, you know, seeming anything to accomplish, for us to accomplish. It's mere acceptance or remembrance of the truth of what already is. It's done. You are the self. Seeing the self is being the self, and being the self is seeing the self. That seems like, you know, listen to that again and just take it in. Seeing the self is being the self. And being the self is seeing the self. They're inseparable. One of the instructions from the Direct Path Meditation audios done by Karen Wirth, part of that instruction speaks to see the seer. See the seer. So both the attention of seeing the seer, same thing here, that's seeing the self, being the self. Seeing the seer, being the self, is seeing the self. We have focused our attention on self, with self. Until there, you know, no longer seems to be a direction of having to turn 180 degrees to see the seer instead of seeing the object or seeing something apart from myself that I'm trying to connect with. The seeing of the self is the awareness, watching the awareness. Directionless. You are the knowledge. You are the knowing. You are the truth. You are the freedom. Self-truth knowing is knowing the goodness of yourself. Knowing the goodness of yourself. Self-truth knowing is knowing the goodness, preciousness, and uniqueness of the self. Yourself exists now and forever. Self-truth knowing is the self. Self-truth knowing is knowing the truth of the self. It is knowing that the self exists. It is knowing that the self is free, whole, joyous. Yes, that is all good. It is knowing the self is. And I would say to that, in direct experience, to know it from a mental framework is shallow. I can attest to that. It's shallow. The deepness comes when I stop straddling the fence. Sometimes I wanna, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I wanna be present, and sometimes I wanna daydream. Sometimes I wanna judge, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I wanna see the goodness, and sometimes I don't. Making the clear-cut choice for liberation is akin to being held underwater. You know, how long can I stay underwater before I have to come up for air? And if someone's holding me under, does that intensity not increase as the amount of time is spent underwater that I want to get to the surface for a breath of air? Now, how great is my intensity if I'm straddling the fence? There must be a clear-cut choice. Yep. So it is the self, it is the self knowing and being the self. This knowing is understanding. This knowing is understanding. And again, any understanding apart from that knowing in direct experience that I am this self and only this, this knowing is understanding. Not any other, learning or thinking about or discussing or any of that. It has nothing to do with that. This is not the knowing that speaks to, and or the understanding this knowing speaks to. It is the self knowing the self. And that's not just once in a while, it's all the time. That is your living presence in awareness, in direct experience. And so, as she shared with us this morning, even in her 5 minutes of noticing herself out of alignment, that's what we're doing. We're remembering in those moments when we find ourselves forgetting who we are to simply return our attention back to the self. That's it. There's nothing complicated about it. So back to the book. You are the self. You are the self. The self is you. The self is your I am. Say the mantra. And not just in that, rote way. That's like, that makes me think of when I used to go to church when I was a kid. I told you guys I went to Catholic school, so we had to go to church every morning before school. And then my mom took us to church on Sundays as well. So I went to church 6 days a week. And most of the time I was bored. But I would often go off into, even as a young kid, I would go off into a what I'm going to call a meditation, where I would repeat a mantra, even if it was something as silly as "I love you, Jesus." I would say that throughout the whole mass, which didn't really take all that long during school week, but I would say that over and over and over as like a game I played with myself. To see if I could get to 1,000 times before the half hour service was over. And that's not the kind of rote and I did love Jesus. I mean, I think I did love Jesus too, but I kind of laugh about it now because I remember that as not a direct experience of knowing Jesus, but more as an exercise to entertain myself because I was bored. And that's not what this is asking us to do when we use any sort of a mantra, such as "I am that I am," to bring or our lesson for today, which all says all things are echoes of the voice for God. Just take some seconds even to reflect on that. Take it in. That is the juice. That is the help that's available. That is the love. That is redirecting our attention back to the truth of who we are, the self we say we so want to know. So why wouldn't we lovingly engage that instead of just, blowing it off, saying it like, fake it till you make it kind of a way. What's the point of that? I never really got that. I mean, yeah, I get that sometimes we're not having consistent direct experiences of all these, I don't know. I don't even care what these experiences can or might look like. I don't even care about that. I simply have faith that beyond this, what I think I know, beyond that, the truth will be revealed to me when I'm fully open and ready. And that's now. That's now. So the self is your I am. The self exists because you exist as the self. And Michael Langford gives a definition of awareness, and it's a simple definition. When you wake up in the morning, you're aware. That's who you are. And you're aware until you go to sleep at night. That's yourself. You exist. When you wake up in the morning, you don't question, do I exist? You fully accept I exist. But the mind generally goes straight to thought and quickly covers over your very existence. The self exists because you exist as the self. The self I am describing can never be fully described in words. You must experience the self yourself. There is nothing negative about the self. It is positive. It is free and freeing. It is joy and joyous. And most blessed of all, it is you. You are the self. You are self-truth knowing. You are the I am of your own being. The spiritual you is the I am. Be the I am. Express the I am. Live the I am. The I am of you is saying to you right now, I am knowing the truth of myself, and the knowing of the truth of myself is freedom. Freedom. So, okay, I see that it's 11:24. I'm not sure I'll get through the next section, but I'll give it a go. I'll start. Okay, Cheryl, I see. I will let you know what pages I read today. So, excuse me, yourself as consciousness. It is of paramount importance to realize that yourself is much more than your material body. It's even much more than your human intellectuality. Yourself is your consciousness, your inspired, eternal, loving consciousness. You exist as consciousness. Because you are consciousness, you exist. Because you are consciousness, you exist. Think of yourself as consciousness. You are conscious of yourself. Think of the tremendous power available to you in that statement. You are conscious of yourself. Yourself is consciousness. Consciousness is your self. This repetition reminds me of A Course in Miracles, same way. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be repeated over and over and over and over and over and over and over if we didn't need to hear it over and over and over. And we can decide to hear it once and for all and really step into the self as the truth of who I am already accomplished, not something I'm seeking for, already accomplished. Consciousness can only be experienced. It can never be fully explained. Consciousness is freedom from all the clothing of human reasoning about it. And I think it was Hal this morning that was talking about the layers of clothing in the same way that this is speaking of it, where, you know, we just with thought, the add-on, heaping upon the pure spaciousness, boundlessness, of self, we heap on through thought, through belief, through judgment, through opinions, through misidentification. That's the clothing it speaks to. And it's saying consciousness is freedom from all that clothing of human reasoning about it. Consciousness is freedom from all the clothing of human reasoning about it. Human reasoning. Right away, that tells me human reasoning, faulty. Listening to thought. I already know what consciousness is. I already know what freedom is. I already know that I'm aware. What do you mean? Am I aware that I'm aware? Of course I'm aware. You know, that knower. That's the clothing. And so unless I open my mind to the fresh slate, the clean altar, the one that asks in all things, recognizing it does not know, I won't experience this consciousness of freedom. So let's see. Maybe I can get to the bottom of this page. We'll see how it goes. That'll be no, maybe not. At any rate, maybe one more paragraph. Teaching, as I view it, is helping the student remove outworn clothing of thought. I love that. Remove outworn clothing of thought, and don't give it to Goodwill, so somebody else can wear it. Just get rid of it. These clothes of thought are presented in many ways through church doctrines, creeds, and dogmas, through family instructions, through philosophy, psychology, and through so many other coverings. All of these may be helpful for a time, but if we are told, I'm sorry, but if we are to behold the spontaneity of consciousness, all these coverings must eventually be laid aside. And I like the way that behold the spontaneity of consciousness. That speaks to now and now and now, not as a moment in time, but just as a moment of presence, of living as the self that is accomplished already. Only then, as we stand mentally naked, do we find enlightened consciousness. And I see that it is 11:30. Miss Cheryl, I read from pages 38 to 45, and I am ending on the middle of the page on page 45 from the section called Yourself as Consciousness. So 38 to 45. Thanks, guys, for joining with me. I appreciate it, and I will see you in the sanctuary. Have a great day.